Luba Mayakisa, are you back? Adolf says, Luba is too cerebral for this hour of the morning. Please don't fizz out my brain. All right, Luba, you heard that.
Right, exactly.
All right, so Luba, you've, it's a very serious topic because there has been a spate of terrible crimes in Cape Town and some of them very visible. And, I'm not sure that we have mustered up the outrage that perhaps we should. Give me your thoughts.
No, I was thanks, Lindy. I think as South Africans in general, we've just got accustomed to crime, that it's going to happen. I mean, I've shared with you before that where I live, you know, we have a neighborhood watch. I'm now forced to pay 500 rand to belong to a neighborhood watch besides the other, you know, rapid response and everything else. And I think we just accept it. You know, I read a Facebook statement, a good friend of mine who had his LED TV nicked, and his post was like, you know, these guys came and they did the hustle. They stole my TV. Don't worry. I've got another one so you can come and try again. And when I read people's posts, everybody was saying, look, we know that you got to hustle to make ends meet. It's fine. We accept that, you know, but don't traumatize us. So it wasn't some people calling out saying that crime is wrong. It was more saying, you know what, the psychological effects on the people who were in the house when you came to steal. And I read a whole bunch of posts and people were quite comfortable. And I saw this, mid-month last month, I happened to go to the city. An elderly gentleman stopped me and said, you know what, that guy down the street just stole copper cable from this car. But the man was walking down a street outside Parliament holding a huge bundle of copper cable and nobody did a thing. The car guards were there and he said to me, catch him. And part of me thought, but why me? I mean, you know, everybody else is unconcerned. And eventually I ran after the guy and I said to him, put the cable down. He looked at me and he's like, what's your problem? So I had to lie and say to him, look, the white van that you just opened and stole the cable from was mine. So put it down or I'll call the cops. And after a while, he put it down. But I kept asking myself and saying, but why did anybody else not do anything? You know, our daughter had the same thing. She sat in a car, talking on the phone to a friend. And while she was chatting, she just dropped off her mom and in the parking lot. The passenger door opened and the rear door opened and two guys got in and just sat in the car. And she had to say to a friend, look, I'll call you back. And she said, get out the car. And they got out the car. But the car guard who had directed it there was doing nothing. And when she turned around, her mom's bag was gone with her MacBook. And she had to run down the street. And she fortunately, she saw them and got caught up with them and said, put my mom's bag down. And they did. I don't know why she was that brave, but she got the bag back.
Yo,
but again, this was Long Street. Broad daylight, 4 o'clock when this happened. Nobody did a thing, nobody blinked. And that's what worries me, is that you can be mugged in the middle of Sandton or wherever and nobody will say or do a thing. And they will see you getting mugged and people will carry on as if life is normal. And I think for me, that's the worry, is that we've almost resigned ourselves to the fact that this will happen, we will be victims of crime, and we must just get on with it and just carry on living. And I refuse to accept that, you know. So that's why I chased this particular guy. You know, I brought the copper cable back and I had to phone the company. I mean, it took me almost an hour to return it because I had to phone the company and I had to wait for them. And when they came, they were more shocked than anything that I had actually spent this time trying to get their copper cable back.
Yeah, because we're not used to people getting involved. David, isn't there a psychological
yes.
a psychological thing about this?
Yeah, it's called the bystander effect. Mm. And, you know, basically people just – when there are other people, or there's this assumption that there are other people around, that, you know, people just kind of relinquish any kind of responsibility and kind of,
you know, it's that famous case in the United States. I can't remember her name. Maybe a listener can help us out, on 34519 or 0618951019. It was a G Jenner something or other. And, she was being attacked. And I think she screamed for a significant period of time and, people heard it, but nobody did anything about it because they assumed somebody else was going to do it.
No, absolutely. And I think for me, that's exactly what Luba's kind of alluding to, is that we don't, you know, because it's so common, and because it happens so much, you know, and the other people around that who are aware of it, that, you know, someone else will take, you know, responsibility for it. And then we do tend to let things become normal and people get away with things like, you know, like what Luba's describing.
So Luba, do you think that's what it is there, or do you think it's the fact that just people are so desensitized to crime happening around them?
I think it's desensitized to crime happening, that it's become the norm that this happens. But the worrying thing is, I mean, there was a time when we cared. There was a time when somebody came to your rescue. If somebody shouted, you know, I still laugh. My mother kept a photograph of me in high school here in St. George's. We were playing rugby and we're practicing. And then a guy grabbed a bag from a lady and ran off. And our coach said to us, boys, after him. We had to scale the fence and chase him. You know, so back in the day, you couldn't be a bystander. You were expected to do something. But somehow, slowly, we've just got accustomed to it that you could be lying on the street and practically dying and nobody will care. And you could have an accident and people merely stop just to look so that they can have the latest news to report on. And I think that's what worries me. So when I look at the neighborhoods, I mean, I met a young guy last month. He's in his 20s, UCT graduate masters. He's developed an app, an alarm for kind of townships, and he's hoping that sound off with ADT, but the idea is that you've got a bunch of neighbors and they're all linked in. So if something happens, it sends a distress signal and one of them will come to your rescue. And the question I kept asking him is, but how sure are you it will work? Because people don't want to come to your rescue. And so whilst it's a novel idea, the question is, will my neighbors come to my rescue if something is happening? And right now, I'm not entirely sure. You know, because we've become so desensitized and we've also got, you know, you fight with your neighbor over the tree that's kind of dropping leaves over your property. The neighborliness is not there. But down in the street as well, we just don't care. But I think we can, but we have to make it a deliberate project where we have to say, we have to almost reinstill that value. I mean, I ask myself and I say, if somebody were to snatch a handbag from my daughter, if she's walking down the street, would anybody come to her defense? Right now, I don't think so. I can't honestly look you in the eye and say, yes, that, you know, somebody will come to a defense. And that is worrying because part of it is saying that we should be a society that cares for each other and that if you see something happening, you should step up and do something about it, regardless of whether you know the person or not or what color or whatever. You should feel obliged, morally obliged to step up and say, I can't let this happen. Hmm. But we're not there. Now, I don't
so
know
how do we change it? How do we change it? David, how do we change this?
Well, I think it's, again, about awareness. If you're not aware that this is happening, then we can't make any changes. So I think for me, the first part is to put it out there that this is what we do, that we've come in some way, we've given up responsibility for other people and for things that don't affect us directly. You know, and I think that's something that is, I think many of us are guilty of, I think in the world, but especially in this country. If it doesn't affect us, then kind of it's not our responsibility. And this,
David, can I ask, is it a generational issue? Because you see, the incident that I pointed to with copper wire, the gentleman who called me was quite an elderly gentleman. And he said he saw this guy walking down the road, trying to open its car door that he walked past. Now he's doing this outside Parliament broad daylight, the security guards, but nobody does a thing. And he actually said to me, had I been younger, I would have chased the man. He says, the reason I called you, I asked you, because I asked him, I said, why pick on me? He said, I'm too old. If I was younger, I would have chased him down, but I can't. But he was concerned, right? But nobody else was concerned around him.
Yeah. No, I think we've got to be very careful. I think we give the, you know, this young generation a bad rap. You know, of course they are a lot of young people with consciousness and who know right from wrong and will act. But I do think for me, it's more about, about if it doesn't affect us, and even as a young person.
And you don't want to put yourself at risk.
And exactly. We don't want to put ourselves.
And in fairness, I do think that is something that is not unreasonable. You know, Luba, we live certainly in Johannesburg. People kill over a cell phone. You know, you really can lose your life when I think about my two incidents that I had, both of them, when I was held up at gunpoint, were in front of security guards. And in both cases, I was extremely grateful that the security guards just stood back, lay on the floor and did whatever they were meant to do. Just simply because I think it could have created more volatility. And I was actually relieved that that's what they did.
Howard, I agree with you. I've chased somebody who I thought stole from my car when I was a student. Chased him down on campus at Forte. When I caught up with him, he pulled a knife. And fortunately, I saw it in the, it was at night in the moonlight, and I backed off. And two ladies who were behind me then said, "You're a coward," stepped up and pulverized him. I mean, I was shocked.
I love that story.
And one of them had an electric cord from a kettle, and they said, "You're a coward, a knife." And I said, "I'm sorry, I didn't grow up with knife fights or even fighting at home, so I'm not used to fighting." So I stepped back. So I do know my boundaries. So when I looked at this guy, I did subjectively, it sounds horrible, but I did sum him up and say, "Is this the kind of guy who'd be carrying a gun?" And I said, "No, but he might carry a knife." So when I approached him, I still kept my distance, but across the road, there were two police cars. And I said to him, "Listen, this can escalate." I never threatened him harm. I just simply said, there are two cop cars. I'll call the police and this can turn nasty. Just put it down. But I knew that if he resisted, I wasn't going to fight over it, you know? So I just used the threat of cars in police cars in proximity. But if he pulled a knife and got aggressive, no, I would have let it go. So I have my boundaries, and certainly I think a person is armed with a gun or something else, I'm going to keep my distance. So it wasn't just a reckless case of, you know what, let me be a hero and chase him down. You know, I had to say to myself that my own safety as well during this whole process is paramount.
Well, that is that whole idea of the fight and flight, and you know, if you that self-preservation kicks in, you know, do I attack, do I help, do I run away? And that definitely you know, is a very spontaneous reaction. But I think again, it's about a degree of getting involved. You know, do you actually have to chase the guy, you know, or can you shout and scream and, you know, try and alert other people? So I think it's also the
and
degree.
That costs you nothing. See, David, shouting and screaming, that's what I'm just saying, is you could shout. It doesn't necessarily expose you. The guy could be down the road. You could shout. In this case, there were police vans, so somebody could have simply knocked on the window and said, "That guy's just stolen something." So without getting involved, people could have done a whole lot. And this is why I'm questioning that people just carried on walking as if life was normal. They were just taking a stroll.
Yeah, Janine says, "In the early 90s, before I had a cell phone, my car broke down at 11:30 p.m. I knocked on a few doors and no one would let me in or even make a call on my behalf." So I think we've been doing this for a while, not really caring about each other. So I think David's right. I think the first thing that we have to do is actually be aware of this and try and get involved where it won't harm you. So as Luba says, you know, it costs you nothing to scream and shout, you know, hoot, get help, knock on a window, do something about it. And I think it's important that the very, very first thing that we need to do is start talking about these things and in order to make ourselves aware.
Luba, I just want to know if you found out whether those women were vegan or not.
There's no ways a vegan is carrying a kettle cord in their thing and then beating up people.
No, they certainly weren't vegan, trust me.
Time is 8:58. Luba Mayekiso, thank you as always. David Abramson, thank you as always. We're going to take a very quick and final look.